ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is super cool. His name is Himanshu Nigam, and he's the founder and CEO of SSP Blue, an online security consultancy that helps everyone from entertainment giants to government agencies to private citizens. And he helps them deal with the growing challenges in cybersecurity, privacy, and safety. Prior to SSP, he was the chief security officer for News Corp and Fox Interactive Media's digital properties and served as a federal prosecutor against online and computer crimes. He's a leading authority on online security and was a member of the White House's Cyber Stalking Task Force, has worked in tandem with the United Nations, and was co-chair of President Obama's Online Safety Technology Working Group. He's also a strategic advisor to Status Core, a new content company putting content creation into the cloud. Himu, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, and I'm happy to be here.
What does your company do, if just for those people who aren't aware, give the Cliff Notes version, if you will, of what your company does?
So SSP Blue comes from safety, security, privacy. So it's your blueprint for safety, security, privacy. And in essence, we focus on either crisis response to a crisis or getting you ready before one happens, specifically in the public affairs, government affairs, public relations arena. And we also handle policy, everything from development creation to writing privacy policies. And then in those rare instances when we get asked, we are capable of using white hat hackers and breaking into networks and telling you how we did it and then telling you how to fix it.
Wow, that's really cool. Super cool. In a recent Deadline article, it said that you caught the fact that the vendors were likely the source of the Netflix Orange is the New Black hack that happened earlier this year. How did you ascertain that a third-party vendor was likely the source of the hack?
Well, the way I was looking at it is many of the production houses or the studio to distribute the content like Orange is the New Black comes out through the network, except they're not always producing their own. They hire production companies, which then hire and outsource to vendors to do post-production, to do sound and audio and all of these kinds of things. And the reality of the situation in Hollywood and frankly across the country in the creative community is that vendors are not as strong in their bucket of money that they have to do big, big investments in cybersecurity. It's just not the way the industry operates. And so what I think hackers are starting to figure out is that, well, if I go to a vendor, I'll get in. Just kind of like Target was hit by first in our hackers going through a vendor that was managing their point of sale system. Mm. So that's one of the things that hackers have figured out is if I want to hit something, I'll go to people who give me ingress into those systems as opposed to simply trying to break in directly in a major company that has major resources to provide major cybersecurity, especially after the Sony hack.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that's actually very interesting to a small business like mine, which does serve very large corporations, is what are some of the best practices for businesses who are both on the vendor side and also the purchaser side? Because, you know, if you are working with smaller businesses, there are cost prohibitive things and you maybe want this talented person. What can you do? I know like Marvel, HBO, some of our clients have started to institute various rules about where phones can be, where internet connections can be. But, you know, are those sort of theater of security or are they actually making it more secure?
Well, the way that hackers think is if I can get in easily, I will get in. If I have to spend a lot more time trying to break in, they tend to find the next easy target. So from a security perspective, the way to think about it is first, assume it's going to happen. I think one of the things that's true in the vendor community, because you're dealing with smaller companies, is there's often this false notion that who's going to actually care about me? But the fact that you're connected to some major organizations that are producing major content for the masses in this country and around the world, hackers will care about you. So, but that said, the positive is if you can do what I would consider to be in many ways basic security practices, then it sends a message to hackers that you're aware of it, that you care about it, and don't waste your time, go somewhere else. So, for example, running the latest operating systems and keeping them updated. Now, that sounds like an unusual thing, almost a obvious thing, but the reality is it costs money to upgrade to the next operating system. And there's this tendency to hit that remind me later button when there's an update. I'm sure you did it in the past.
Yes.
When you're working on an email, it's like that pop-up comes and says, you know, install your latest update, and you say, remind me later. In my personal point of view, that button needs to be banned from the internet that says remind me later, because it's telling the hacker, the company is saying, I have identified a hole in the system that I have now patched. I need you to update your system so you have the patches working for you. And what you're saying is, hey, burglar, who I know that my door lock has been broken, and you know what? Tell me later on to come and fix it. I don't feel like doing it right. And that's one of those things that we have to change in our daily way of thinking about it. So, and the latest operating systems are actually way more secure than the older ones. So it's always better to go with the latest, even if it means spending a little bit more money on that. That's one.
Well, I guess the other thing with that, and I guess, you know, just to push back a tiny bit, is you upgrade and then my email program doesn't work because they're not supporting it anymore, or it doesn't, you know, it's like your door is broken. And robbers beware, but if you fix your lock, then your dog will never be able to come into your house again until you buy a new dog.
Well, you have a special dog if they know how to unlock your door. But the reality today is that the operating systems are just version one, version two. I'm using basic versions, but the next version is really updating, but that issue of things getting broken is much, much better now than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And I think people still remember that, but the reality is today it's way better to do that. And the other thing to do is focus on downloading, installing the latest antivirus, anti-phishing software, and again, keeping an update on those. So for example, and I'm not going to, in a sense, give a stamp on any vendors out there, because that's not why we're here, but there's some major companies out there that offer it. There's free ones that are out there as well. So whatever your choice is, and I personally would go with the major companies because they have more people to respond to brewing threats and figure out what might be coming next from the hacker community, and therefore can update better. Mm-hmm. But install those pieces of software and run them so they're automatically updating. Often people choose the setting of, well, I will decide when to update. Well, it can be a minute before a hacker gets in and gets out and your system is owned. So it's not worth the choosing. It's much better to say, just do it in the background automatically.
Fantastic. So two really basic things which every company can implement are keeping the latest OS
company
system.
Company and people.
And
so if
people.
You have a smaller company, you may have only 5 people or 10 people. You don't have an IT person, set it up and set up a reminder on the calendar. Have your group admin, that's somebody's job, to say, hey, everybody, time to update.
Right.
Kind of like time to go to lunch. So
everybody likes.
Think of it that way. And the third thing is when things come in, this is often a trap used by hackers, is the phishing trap. Something may come in, they know you're a vendor. You might get an email coming from one of the major studios saying, hey, we're interested in working with you. Any kind of line that gets exciting. And then you open it, which is fine. You click on something because you're so excited to find out what the attachment might be or the link to something they're asking you to go to. But before you actually complete that click, all you have to do is hover your mouse over it and say, look in the lower right corner of your screen, and there'll either be a bunch of gobbledygook or the actual URL of the company that's reaching out to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what people tend not to focus on, because if it is that gobbledygook, you could be being sent off to some place that's going to drop a virus or have you fill out a form or tell you you got accidentally logged out and ask you for your username and password. And again, your system gets owned. So those are some basic things that can truly make a difference. And to tie it back to Orange is the New Black, the vendor that got hit had one machine they hadn't updated. That's all it took. They went through that machine and it was connected to their network.
Wow. That's so terrifying. So what would you say is the biggest cyber threat that's facing media companies in the entertainment industry right now?
Well, I think the biggest cyber threat is the same one that we all face, that technology keeps improving and developing and there's new systems. And now in today's world, there is no such thing for people not to be connected. And if you are connected, then you are a threat. You face a threat from hackers. So the whole concept of moving quickly, and I know when you ask the question of cyber threat, I'm actually going to respond in exactly the opposite. It's just the way we are as human beings in this society. We're texting, we're talking, we're surfing, we're clicking on a laptop, but we also are looking at an iPad, and then we're grabbing our cell phone and doing something, and we're not always thinking, are all my devices connected, secure? We're just doing things very quickly. We're multitasking way too fast. And I think what we have to do is almost go back in time and say, let's slow down just a little bit and be more conscious of what we're doing rather than trying to get done whatever it is we're doing.
Wow.
And I think that's what's causing bigger. And that's true everywhere, whether you're in the government or you're in the East Coast government or you're in the West Coast Hollywood world.
Wow. So is it simply once that door is open? I was wondering, how did the hackers obtain so much from HBO? Is it simply their way in? Once you're in and you access everything? Or?
Well, that's a good question. I actually don't know what happened in HBO and they haven't talked about it. There's an ongoing criminal investigation, so we have to wait and see what happens. But I will say this, in many companies out there, there is this notion of putting those walls and forts around the building, right? Taking a physical world analogy, you make sure that all these walls are all these door locks and gates are secure. But once you're in, for example, in your own house, you were talking about your house. I'm sure if you come in through the front door or the back door, let's say it was broken into, you can go into your kitchen, your living room, your dining room, your bedrooms, your garage from your house, then your guest room, if you have one, your laundry room, your showers, whatever it is, your closet, everything is open. There may be in some houses one closet that somebody locks because they don't want the kids to go in there, right? But in general, that's how houses are. That concept still exists in many companies out there, where you break into the network from the outside in, then you go inside and around. But think about hotels. They don't think like that when it comes to security. They actually say, okay, you can come in the lobby, but now you want to go to a guest room, you need a key. Even oftentimes, you need a key for the elevator. You want the gym, you need a key. You want the laundry, if they have one, you need a key. So there's all sorts of thinking about outside in, but you're still not getting inside around.
Right.
And I think that's the movement we have to do, that and need to know access. Oftentimes somebody in HR has access to marketing. Marketing has access to finance. And so people are sharing in their network without, not because they want to, but because they don't realize it's set up that way.
Right. Right. I see. You had a YouTube video, actually, you were talking, I believe, to the hospitality industry. And you gave some startling statistics. And I don't remember actually if the video was old or new. It was something like 30,000 hacks on websites daily. Is it still 30,000? Is that really what's happening? Is it worse?
Well, those numbers are constantly going up for a couple of reasons. One, there's more and more hackers out there. Two, more connected devices, which means there's more places to hit. More websites are being created. And hackers are also using automated technologies to go and hit different websites and see if they're open to common vulnerabilities, things that they expect people not to think about, but are easy ways in. So I think, and that's what I mean by originally what we talked about, which is hackers are lazy. They're going to look for the easiest way in. And that's true with every criminal, right? If I can find an easy way in, why should I take the complicated way? In fact, in the movies, they sometimes have comedic scenes about that, where somebody checks the front door while the other person is trying to break in a window through another window to get in. And the guy just walks in the front door and says, you should have opened the door. You know, and now that I've said that, you'll see that in movies again.
I'm sure I will. I'm so, like, oh.
Yeah. So I think those numbers are going to continue to go up. As now we're up to, I believe, 5 billion people connected in this world to the internet somehow. I think that's what the latest number is.
Well, it's interesting. You know, we were looking at One of the things we do is survey young millennial Gen Z behaviors, and we looked at young millennials on their attitudes around piracy and how many were downloading. And we found that 37% of the young millennials believe it's wrong to download content without paying for it. And yet 18% of them, and 18% of them are streaming it without paying for it. But they don't think that there's anything really wrong. Their attitudes around the ethics of it are, it's just culturally, they want to get it for free. It's when they want it, how they want it. And yet I wonder how much awareness there is that they're exposing themselves to, you know, what's their self-interest? And is that a sort of a way that people can be educated about piracy from a very self-interested point of view? Like, yeah, you can see the movie, but by the way, now they can see your bedroom or something like that.
That's absolutely true. And let me start by saying this. The fact that downloading a movie or getting it in some farmer's market where they were selling pirated content somewhere, that's been illegal and ethically wrong since the beginning of time, as long as there's intellectual property, right? So that has always been true. The challenge that we have always had is training young people to understand that, which is also true in educating any young person. Stealing is wrong.
Right.
And stealing intellectual property is wrong just as well as stealing from a grocery store.
Right.
So one thing that has happened in addition to that is not only is stealing movies, for example, is wrong, but it's also dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that is something that hackers have figured out a way to work with pirate websites and give them money to install what I'll call generically malware onto a customer who's looking for pirated content onto their computer or device. So that's a new development that started about a year and a half ago, and it was identified through a research project at Digital Citizens Alliance, the nonprofit that focuses on educating consumers about the dangers online and then making suggestions. So Digital Citizens Alliance did a study by using a company called Risk IQ, and what they found was that hackers were paying pirate websites to download and install malware onto visitors' systems, even if they didn't actually stream something or download something. There was a 30% chance you were going to get hit with a virus, a Trojan, ransomware type of malware, which means that if you are at home and you wanted to watch something streaming, you could be watching something streaming in a movie, a streaming of a movie, illegally while there's a hacker watching you in your bed and recording it. So that's how it's becoming dangerous. Or they can drop what's called a keystroke logger. They're capturing everything you're typing. Somebody goes to their bank account online. All of a sudden, their username and password is controlled, and they can take over that bank account. Or they take what they've dropped on your system, lock it now that they have access, and they say, well, if you want more, if you want it back, give us money. So your free stream of a movie turns into a $300 bill. So to a hacker who may or may not withhold their end of the bargain.
Wow. That's so terrifying. It really...
It is. And there's a new campaign that's starting now where state attorneys general have stepped up and said 28 state attorneys general have put public service announcements together. They've recorded and they'll start playing in different states around the country that actually raise this issue with parents and kids and constituents.
Wow. I mean, so also you've spoken about how it's not just, I mean, this is a building skill set, if you will, right? I mean, that people are learning, these bad actors, for lack of a better term, are learning and teaming up and how to improve their skills and commit bigger crimes. Yes?
Well, it's evolving. It's evolving from what used to be called script kiddies. People were just doing it for fun and say, oh, look, I got into a website and I made it all black and it used to be nice and white, or now it's all pink and look what I did. How cool is that? To organize crime, recognizing the fact that there's money to be made here. So they're hiring hackers to go, say, get what I call high value files, which means attacking a network, let's say, that has username, passwords, email addresses, social security, bank account. The more data there is in a file of a particular individual, the greater the identity theft can be. So, and the greater the cost is, or the price is that a organized crime person is willing to pay a hacker to collect. So they may say 25 cents per file or 50 cents a file, depending on what's in that file. And I need 25,000 of them because I'm about to do a spam campaign, or I need 50,000 because I'm going to do a takedown of a website I'm against. So it could be organized crime for financial gain. It could be for what people call hacktivism, meaning we're doing it for a social cause, even though they're using illegal tactics to promote the social cause.
Oh, like anonymous taking down a site, something like that. Okay. Yeah, there's a certain amount of mythology around the hackers. Is the profile of who a hacker is? Is it a bunch of teen kids? Is it a bunch of organized criminal? Like, what? Who are hackers? Or is there no profile for the hacker?
No, that's a question that comes up often. It's in a strange way. It's the same kind of question that comes up as, well, what does a pedophile look like? Because I used to prosecute online crimes against children, and I used to prosecute. I was in the sex crimes unit in the LA District Attorney's Office, and handled child abuse and child molestation cases. The fact of the matter is, hackers can be an engineer with a nicely educated degree coming from a good home who just decided to cross the line. Or it could be a government hired agent who's doing it for counterintelligence purposes. And some countries who are some enemy nation states will do it for purposes to attack, for example, the security of the United States and its citizens. It could be somebody who's just a teenager who has self-taught themselves or actually wants to go into computer science. But hackers can be what we call white hat, gray hat, or black hat. White hat are the ones who know how to break into systems, but they're doing it for legitimate reasons. They're authorized to do it, and they're trying to help find vulnerabilities so that it can be fixed. We often get hired to do that kind of hacking. There's also black hat hackers who are doing it purely for illegal purposes, for whether it's financial gain or for attacking or harassing or whatever other reasons there might be. And then there's what are called gray hats, which are people who are willing to who may have crossed the line into the illegal world and also are willing to do things on the other side. And there's always this discussion in the industry of, should you hire a gray hat? What if they change their mind and do something illegal that they've done it before? Or, well, are they reformed now? And those kinds of questions happen much the same way as they do in the typical street criminal world of, well, I've done my time. I want a job. Well, I don't know. What if you do it again? And those kinds of discussions. And that's actually happening in the cyber community now.
Right. Well, it's interesting because you think, well, you know, they have this skill set. And if you don't give them jobs, are they, you know, and they have the skill set, what are you encouraging them to do? You know, has somebody reformed? Do you trust them?
It really boils down to a pure question of moral compass. Where does your moral compass lie?
Once you've broken
millions
your
and
moral
billions
compass,
of people, right?
Yeah, that's really rural. So if you're a company and you've had a breach, but you haven't told anybody yet, there's that period of time, before you say, guess what, this happened, what should you be doing?
Well, that's interesting when that happens, is because oftentimes in a company, a larger company especially, there's a lot of internal stakeholders that have not so much competing interests, but time-driven interests where the engineering and the tech group is saying, I need to figure out what happened, is it still happening, and stop it.
Right.
And how bad is the damage, and is there other things that we don't even know happened, so we have to figure out maybe was there another vulnerability that we're not yet aware of, but we need to figure it out. There's this real strong desire in the tech community, in tech group inside, to say, leave me alone, let me do my thing, let me go figure out what happened. But on the other hand, you have the legal team who is facing the challenge of, is this going to lead to lawsuits or government inquiry, for example, from the Federal Trade Commission or other organizations saying, we're going to do an investigation and figure out why this vulnerability happened that impacted your customers. And so their challenge internally is, well, how much can I really say right now? Because what if we say something incorrectly that creates a bigger investigation? We also have to figure out, when do the notification requirements kick in? There's 44 laws, I think, or 48 laws, different state laws on how to notify a customer based on what the attack is. or what kind of data is stolen. So there's all sorts of legal requirements they're facing. And there's this notion of maybe we need to just not say so much so fast right now until we gather the facts. Then they have the public relations team that is getting calls when it does go public, or who knows that if it goes public, they're going to have to get ready. And they can't make a mistake in what they go out with a statement on. But they also don't want to say no comment, because that makes, oftentimes you get accused of, oh, there must be something horrible going on, you didn't want to talk. And so there's these different types of, and you can't say something that's not correct, because fixing that later creates a whole new set of news cycle. So there's all of these competing interests, and that's not even including the marketing folks that are worried about how is this going to impact brand reputation, CEO who's saying, what am I saying to my investors or Wall Street? It's a public company. So there's, and a financial group that's saying, well, looks like we're going to be spending, I'm not going to make our target, because we're going to have to spend millions on cleaning up what just happened, and we may lose contracts because of it, or we may get sued because of it. So there's going to be a financial impact that's direct and serious. And all of this is happening in real time, all of these discussions and sometimes confusion, sometimes organized. We need to figure this out and move forward.
Wow. Wow. It's so intimidating. Just even thinking about it, I'm imagining all of the things that you've got to do. I mean, I sort of wonder also about all of the ways in which just normal citizens are providing information all the time, and how secure is any of it? You know, I'm thinking about, you know, women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses. In order to get certified, you have to upload everything but your firstborn children, essentially. And how secure is something like that? And how, you know, how you just have to trust them, I guess. Oh, scary.
Well, I think this goes back to a question you asked earlier, which is, you know, what is the greatest threat we're facing? And another way to look at it is, where is your weakest link? Right. It can be any one individual or any one organization, especially since everyone is starting to be connected to everyone else. So if you're uploading a certification for women's owned business, for example, and where you're uploading it, that site is not secure, there's your vulnerability. That can impact the thousands of people who are trying to upload something. And I think that actually translates into something that can be done to change the environment. So we were just talking about all the seriousness that happens and the chaos that can happen inside a company under an attack. So you feel like you're under a seizure. If you embrace it from a simple term, which is, look, I just need to take care of myself. And as a community, we have to inspire everyone to think like that. Just take care of your own. And because we're connected, if you're okay and I'm okay, then we're both going to be okay. But if one of us is not okay, and we didn't care about cybersecurity, then it's going to impact all of us. So this is something that we have to think like a community and act like an individual. And that's how I think we're going to succeed, frankly.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, because, you know, just around the corner, we've got the Internet of Things, driverless cars, and imagining vulnerability there and what could happen is interesting for sure. Bringing world stuff. Well, anyway, I have used
Part
up
two.
So much. Right, exactly. I've used up so much of your time. So thank you so much for joining today. We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media, and a big thank you to our guest, Kimu Nigam. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.